Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Analog Talk. I'm your host, Chris.
I'm Tim.
And today's guest, we have Ben Parks. Hey, Ben.
How are you guys doing?
Hey.
Thanks for joining us.
Of course. Glad to be here.
So, do you mind, for our listeners, can you give us a background on yourself and how you got started in photography?
I think a background, geez. I first got into photography just as a little kid. My dad was a bit of an amateur photographer, so there was always, I'm trying to remember, an old Pentax K1000 lying around the house.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know? So I think, you know, I never shot any film in it. I think for me, it was more just looking through the lens, and you know, I was mesmerized by the kind of the focus split screen. So I spent a lot of time just looking through that. I think I blew a bunch of film of my dad's, you know, unbeknownst to him, you know, when he developed it, it was just blank or pictures of the family dog. But I think really kind of started getting an interest, I think, for most people is in high school.
Yeah.
So that would be about, 1980, 91. So it was still the time of the darkroom. So kind of cut my teeth just shooting Tri-X on, you know, I think everybody's first camera, the Canon AE-1, the school camera, you know. But yeah, after high school, I just kind of fell away from it and didn't really pursue it until later on when I was around 25. I went back to school, to college, and was kind of pursuing a degree in painting and kind of got stuck in my work for a little bit and decided to take, you know, a photography requirement, which we had to do doing the studio arts track. And that kind of reignited my love and interest of photography. So from that point, I kind of worked in painting and photography and then just kind of slowly moved away from painting altogether and just fell in love with the medium at that point and just continued on through that track with graduating with a studio arts degree in photography.
Oh, no kidding.
Wow.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was, you know, kind of a long-winded road to get there, but I haven't put a camera down, I think, since 2000.
That's great.
Yeah. I just carried one with me ever since my first class. You know, it was kind of instilled in us with our photography professor. You know, it was mandatory that we carry a camera with us every day and shoot something
every day.
Yeah. And I still do carry a camera with me everywhere I go, you know, much to the dismay or, you know, dislike of my wife and family.
You know, you're right.
Uh-huh. Oh, I know about that.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It takes me longer to pack my camera bag than it does for my kids and, you know, wife and dog to get out the door.
Yeah, I think I get yelled at every single night for, you take forever to get ready. And it's like, but I need to know what camera am I taking?
What am I going to take?
I mean, what's the light that look like out there? You know?
Yeah.
So, okay. Did you ever get into the digital realm of photography? Did you go down that road at all?
Not really. I've got a digital camera, you know, other than the one on my phone. I don't think it's been charged in probably a couple of years.
I love that.
My son and daughter use it from time to time. But they're more into film as well. So it's just kind of a novelty around the house, really. It's just something we have, but we never use. But it was just, it never had an appeal to me. I think maybe since it was in its infancy, I saw maybe a necessity for it, but it wasn't anything that I gravitated towards or really had an interest in. I don't want to speak down to those that actually do use digital. It doesn't work for me or for my style. So it's nothing I really pursue.
Right.
That's what I was thinking with, I don't know how you would pull off the stuff you do with a digital with a digital camera.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people think that I do shoot digitally and manipulate everything in Photoshop, which is a question that I get asked, weekly, which filters are you using?
That's crazy.
Even though I try and hashtag everything with which cameras, how much, you're doing your effects in Photoshop afterwards. I'm so much of a Luddite. I probably don't even know how to open Photoshop anymore. I just scan with view scan and just save everything on the desktop and just upload it at that point if I need to.
I saw something crazy. I think it was like an F-stoppers video that was on YouTube. You get caught in the YouTube vortex, and he was explaining about his, I guess they do like tutorials or something on there. And he said, and this video comes with 220 skies that you can do replacement skies. And I was like, what? Like, people replace the sky? I had no idea. I was completely blown away by that.
Yeah. So,
I know it's amazing what people are doing, with computers these days. But, for me, you could just walk outside in a 24-hour period and probably come up with 250 different skies that you can look at.
Yeah, right.
Amen to that. That's exactly. So, Ben, speaking of your work, can you kind of go into like your process with us a little bit? Just because I'm looking at these images and I'm like, what?
Yeah, same here.
Yeah, I'll speak to certain things and I want to give up all the mystery behind it.
Of course.
I have, suffer through bad cases of insomnia most days. Mm. And it kind of stems from getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning when my daughter was growing up, when she was born. I would take that 3 o'clock feeding. And from that point on, gosh, that was close to 15 and a half years ago. Mm. I think my body, my clock just changed, and then from that point on, I've just been getting up constantly 4:30, 5:30. It varies from day to day. And I think I noticed, the stillness of Los Angeles at that point. Nobody gets up before 10 o'clock in LA, if they don't have to. So if you go out in the city, there's a completely different feel to it that time. And I think that by just watching the way the sun rises over the mountains and the constant changing of light and the colors that, kind of reveal themselves as the morning hours go on, it really kind of made me realize that, what I was looking for kind of in my painting work, a specific color palette, that I could never achieve through acrylic. I was starting to see visually just that early in the morning. And by getting out and just driving around kind of in the stillness and kind of slowing down, my shooting process and just waiting for the light as it kind of slowly starts to reveal itself, that through that process of waking up early and going out every morning and seeing just how different things change, it really kind of opened my work up to reveal some new avenues that I hadn't before. It's kind of expected to see in my own work. So I just made it kind of a mental note or kind of tried to self-discipline myself to pursue just getting up that early in the morning just constantly going out and shooting, because I think that so much of the beauty in the morning is missed by so many people. And it's just something that, I shoot for myself, but hopefully people, when they look at my images, will kind of see something that they don't necessarily take a look at that early in the morning, even if they're driving to work or drinking their coffee from their house. I think they miss so much of what, the grandeur of the world that we live in is missed just with the noise of what's going on around us. So it's, just my own process to kind of try and capture that stillness and that light and provide that put my work out there. And hopefully people connect with it in a way that, maybe they themselves might try and seek out that kind of stillness, or they just may look at it and say, that's kind of a pretty picture, or they might hate it, which I get people from time to time, comment on that. But, you know, my process is just letting the light dictate to me, you know, how I'm going to shoot that day.
Yeah, I'm I think my favorite section on your website is this City Before Dawn photos. Those are so good.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. But you have to get up super early for that. So getting up at 3 o'clock is like perfect.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I think that, you know, I probably need to revisit that series and shoot some more. You know, I've been kind of shooting more up in kind of the Eastern Sierras lately. And, you know, it's now it's getting a little bit more difficult to get out and do so much exploring with children that are getting older, with the responsibilities of, you know, hauling kids off to school and stuff like that. But, you know, it's even 20 minutes from my house, I can be up in the mountains and shooting. So it's still something from time to time I can get out and do.
Gotta love that about LA.
Yeah, you can definitely, you know, 20 minutes really anywhere. You can be to the coast, to the mountains. You know, and I think that's
the best.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that so many people, you know, don't appreciate that about it. You know, I think they just get lost in the hustle and bustle.
Mm-hmm.
There definitely is a hustle and bustle there. Mm-hmm. For the one weekend I was there, it was pretty crazy.
Yeah, and it doesn't change. It's always the same. You know, it's just more crowded.
So is that what you normally do? Or you mostly get up? Well, yeah, get up early and go out and do that. Or do you have any other kind of stuff that you focus on?
You know, it's mainly kind of getting up early and then going out and shooting. I do shoot sometimes later in the evening. The light is so harsh, you know, kind of during the afternoon here, that it's difficult. But, you know, I do try and shoot something every day, regardless of where I'm at, and just to stay disciplined. And just for my own mental stability, just to be able to kind of get out, even if it's in the backyard, kind of shooting flowers or, you know, abstractly, that even just 10 minutes here or there, it just keeps me centered and keeps me focused. So, yeah, you know, it's, you know, landscapes are a huge part of my work, but, you know, I do shoot portraits every once in a while. It's nothing that I'm really all that great at. You know, I'm horrible directing people, and I have a hard time kind of getting them to relax in front of the camera. So I don't necessarily kind of pursue that. But every once in a while, when I work, you know, collaboratively with people, my friend Adam Goldberg, who you had on the show a couple weeks ago, you know, I sit in with him and our friend Andrew when they're recording albums and shoot those guys when they're working.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. That'd be cool to be a part of that.
Yeah. It's a great process. And it's one of the things that I enjoy most, you know, when I'm not shooting landscape, is just to sit in with other artists and kind of watch them go through their own processes. I think that's, you know, we all kind of glean from one another, but it's, you know, kind of interesting to see what they're doing and maybe incorporate some of their practices, just kind of how, watch them work and how they achieve certain goals. Adam and Andrew work in a way that's really kind of fun to watch. Definitely lends an air of relaxed ability to shoot, you know, just in kind of in a free environment with no restrictions, without having to close people. Those guys, you know, they just bring it in an energy that it's hard to capture.
it's funny how that works, like how different mediums kind of, you can be inspired and pull from things like music or, you know, like you're a painter as well. You know, like I think I've talked about it on the show a couple times, that I was always fascinated with painting, and I wish I had that ability. Yeah. I can't, you know, I'm like a stick figure and a, you know, a sun with a circle with rays poking out of it. You know, like my abilities are not what I wish them to be. And I mean, I guess practice and all that stuff does, you know, play a part. But I feel like things like that, you have to be naturally talented or gifted in that, right, to kind of put your vision down on paper or canvas or something like that. Like, you need to have it. You either have it or you don't. And I'm just like one of those people that doesn't have that. So photography for me, and there's like so many crazy things, like just your spectrum of photography. Like, you're doing stuff that is so like almost abstract and
looks
and
like paintings.
Yeah, it has a painterly quality to it, which is really, really awesome.
It's really nice of you guys to say, because that's really what I've kind of tried to achieve in my work from the beginning, was to arrive at a kind of a painterly quality that you don't necessarily normally see kind of in film photography. You know?
Yeah.
You know, it's getting, trying to working with different emulsions and different films and trying to, you know, kind of come up with that color palette that really kind of speaks to a pastel quality, which, you know, certain films definitely lend themselves to, starting out years ago with Peel Apart Polaroid. With the early IDUV or 669. That was kind of my all-time favorite film back then.
Yeah, the 669 is beautiful.
Yeah, it is. And I still look back at that longingly. You know, I try not to be too upset about it. You know, it was great while it lasted, but unfortunately, it just doesn't, you know, exist anymore. So then I had to go back into the dark room with just color film because I was only shooting Polaroid and FP100C forever. And I didn't think, you know, at that point, I thought I was just going to have to give up photography altogether.
Right. Isn't that crazy?
I can't go back into color film. You know, it's just going to be too difficult. But talking with Adam and we both kind of, you know, I had a tendency to get a little bit frustrated and down on myself, like, oh, I just can't do it. So he talked me off that ledge and just, you know, encouraged me to kind of pursue, you know, looking at, you know, to portrait again, or, you know, with the new Cinema Still stuff that was coming out, you know, and kind of branch out and start developing again on my own. And through developing on my own at the house, you know, I think I've arrived at kind of the point where I'm happy with the results I'm getting. I don't think I've sent film to a lab in a couple of years. It's just all in-house now. Yeah. At the kitchen sink, just working for, you know.
That's the best way to do it.
Exactly. It's just great, you know, and, you know, to expose the family or to, you know, the kids being able to see it, and, you know, they're mesmerized by the magic of photography, which is great to have, you know, a captive audience, you know, ones that are like, don't want to associate with you. Like, no, I don't want to see it.
Do you feel creatively satisfied with the switch to like Cine Still and portrait and stuff?
Yeah, you know, for the most part, I do. You know, I think that, you know, I think we all get frustrated and stuck in our own work, and we always, you know, feel like pieces are never really done. But, you know, I still blow through rolls of film, or when I develop it, I'm just, you know, mortified by the results. And it's just not what I had expected. But I think for the most part, you know, at Portra, for me, what I'm shooting right now, Portra 400, is really kind of what my mainstay is. And at the Cine Still 800T, which I like. But I think the Portra paired with the Cine Still C41, kind of their simple kit, three-step kit. Is for me, is producing the results that I'm looking for. So, you know, if anybody's looking for an easy, you know, home kit to develop, that Cine Still C41 is a great product to use. And I think it, you know, for the ease of, you know, developing color film at home, I think a lot of people should kind of give it a shot.
Yeah, that's one thing I haven't. I just recently got back into doing black and white with the Cine Still Monobath.
Yeah.
So color is like the next step. I feel like I should try that.
Yeah. I mean, are you, you're kind of satisfied with the black and white?
Yeah, for the most part. Yeah, yeah, it's good. Yeah.
I'm always kind of a little reluctant at first to try kind of a two-step bath. I usually do a lot of stand developing, and you just kind of leave it for hours on end to kind of bake in there. But talking to the Wright brothers, those guys, you know, oh, give it a shot. And I tried it, you know, first couple patches were great. So, you know, I use it from time to time. I still use a lot of D76 as well. So,
yeah, I'm D76 or HC110 are my to-go-tos for that.
Yeah. I think you just get to know your kind of, you know, your recipes. And
oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. I love that part of it. I wish everybody who was shooting film, you know, took the time to develop at home. It's not as scary as everybody may, you know, people are always like, oh, I've done black Chris, you know, I did the black and white. Next is like, it's not scary. I mean, as long as you bring it up to temperature, which you can do in your kitchen sink, it's real easy. And I mean, it's actually quicker, I feel like, than developing black and white, because it's, you know, it's a set time for every roll. Like sometimes I'm developing pushed, you know, T-Max or something for 30 minutes, you know, or not with color. I mean, unless you push or pull it, but I mean, you pretty much shoot on the straight and narrow with your film speeds and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I suggest you do it, Chris. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, give it a shot. It's really easy. As long as you can keep the temperature stable, you're fine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's awesome.
And I mean, it's just another one of those things where it's just so great. And I mean, you're taking your art to the next step. You know, I would feel weird letting a lab develop and process my film and send it back to me, because it's like they do editing to it and stuff. So it seems, I don't know. I mean, I get it and I understand why people do it. I'm not knocking it. I don't want to get, you know, some comments on how I'm being mean or something. But like, I just love doing everything and by hand and having it be mine. The more and more I do with it, the more and more I feel like I own it. Yeah. So it's, I don't know.
Yeah, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there. It's, some of the stuff that I sent out to a lab a while back, that when I compared the negatives when I scanned them at home versus the negative that were scanned, you know, the adjustments that were made, to me, I think detracted from kind of what I was going for. So you know, kind of made that decision just to develop it at home, you know.
Yeah.
You know, not to their fault by any means, you know, but, you know, the way I shoot, it's so different and it'd probably be really difficult to interpret what I was trying to put forth on the, you know, the frame for them to see that and be like, I don't know what he's going for.
Yeah, especially with your stuff. That's crazy. Man, I love that Cinestill little vignette thing that they did. I've probably watched your little episode like 12 times since it came out.
No.
And one thing stuck out to me so much. I think it was when you were talking about your Hasselblad, about how it's like broken or something's not right with it. But that's you know, that's like something that you work with that camera.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel that I have a 4-5 camera that's just like I kind of, you know, glued and taped and weaseled my way, and I wanted to use it so bad and it was broken when I got it, so I just kind of made it work. But I use that to my advantage now. If I gave that to somebody else, they'd be like, I don't even know if I can use this. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, I know how to use it, kind of thing. Like, and
makes
I know
it your
what
own.
Yeah.
And I think that all of my cameras have issues in some way or another. You know,
I love that. I love it.
Yeah. It's, you know, with the Hasselblad, you know, my 500cm, it's you know, the shutters are sticky. So you know, 1 second could be 1 second. It could be, you know, 3 minutes. It just depends whenever it's going to close. Yeah. The upper speeds work fine, but you know, the back's loose and has light leaks. And you know, I just kind of cut my teeth on that. It started to see through that camera just the possibilities that that I couldn't achieve with 35 millimeter or a lot of other cameras that I was shooting with at the time. You know, and it can be a frustrating camera at the same time, just dealing with square format. You know, it's kind of why I never really connected with SX70 film through Polaroid. I had it and I shot it for a while, but you know, I was like, oh, I just never felt that camera. And people always point out, well, it's square format as well. How
true.
Come? But there was just something about it that just really wasn't working for me. So I moved into the Hasselblad. And I haven't shot it in a couple of weeks and it's feeling neglected on the shelf. But so I have to take it out. But it's definitely still one of my favorite cameras. And like you were talking about, just the subtle nuances of all these cameras with sticky shutters or, you know, light leaks. To me, I never know what's going to happen. You know, with any of my cameras, you know, if it's going to be completely blown out or one light leak right down the center. So to me, I still am surprised with every shot really that I take. You know, 'cause I envision it one way in the viewfinder when I'm setting it up, but when I actually see the result, it's going to be vastly different, which to me brings that kind of like childlike innocence and wonder, you know, everything that I look at when I, you know, I don't want to sound like I sit around and look at my work just like enamored of it all the time, but it's just, you know, I'm always, you know, amazed. You know, it's like working in the darkroom with, you know, bringing images on paper. It's just, there's something about it. When you see that scan for the first time, you're like, that is amazing. It's, you know, that's not at all what I pictured happening. So it's those subtle things that to me just constantly keep me smiling and amazed by photography.
It's the best.
Yeah, it really is. You know, just that constant wonder. And it just makes me want to shoot more. You're like, okay, well, I'm going to go back to the same spot tomorrow and see what happens.
Yeah.
You know, and it could be a completely different roll of film. You know, and that'll be the roll of film that came out horrible. But at the same time, it's just, I think it's one of those things you just have to discipline yourself to shoot and shoot and shoot and shoot. You know, so much to get familiar with those things. And I would hope that people would kind of want to strive to arrive to that level of understanding with their cameras rather than having like an immediate, you know, kind of satisfaction. You know, so much of the questions that I get about my work are, well, hey, how do you do this? What lens do I need? What camera do I need? How do I get here? How do I get there? You know, and I'm always reluctant to tell them anything other than, well, you just need to kind of get out and shoot. You know, me telling you what I use is not really going to get you there. It's, you have to get out and experience for yourself. It's decades for me shooting. It's taken to arrive to this point, but it's decades of just pure enjoyment followed by moments of horrible frustration, but it's just, yeah, I think that's just the up and downs.
Yeah.
I love that you go out and make it a point to shoot every day. A lot of us get lost in like our 9-to-5s or whatever, yeah, and don't really make the time. I've been kind of in a rut lately as well with that. Like, but you saying like, I just go out every day and make time for it. And that's really just what it comes down to,
yeah,
is just going out. And even if there's no intention, you know, yeah, like go and make the intention, like I'm going with this camera and I'm going to shoot 4 frames if that's, yeah, all you can do for the day. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that's, I think it, you have to, I know it's really difficult because people's lives are very busy. You know, mm-hmm, not everybody's going to want to get up at 4 a.m. to go shoot, but you know,
yeah,
going out in the backyard and just shooting something as simple as, you know, my dog playing in the backyard with, you know, or like I said, you know, a dandelion as it's kind of blowing in the wind. It's, I think it's as much of a kind of a stress release as it is a way for you to stay just in tune and keep your eye in tune,
mm-hmm,
you know, or just look at things a little bit differently. You know, it's going to be a bit more difficult for people that are, say, you know, street photographers because, you know, they're looking for a specific subject matter. So it's, unless, yeah, they want to run out to the street and shoot their neighbors as they're driving down to work. But I think that it's, yeah, if you can set that kind of self-discipline and just be able to try and capture anything, it doesn't have to be anything you want to show or display on Instagram or, you know, whatever vehicle you use to kind of get it out there. But just for yourself, you know, I think it just helps you kind of cope with the day.
So true.
Man, I get it. Because I walk home from work all the time. And because I live like 2.5 blocks away from my job. And my coworkers are always like, do you want to ride home tonight? And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
Like, I need this like 15 minutes of walking home. And just, I mean, even if I don't take a picture, I always have my camera out. And I'm just studying things when I'm walking home.
Mm-hmm.
I love that, like, photography sounds like for you and for me, and I'm sure Chris and a lot of people that are listening, that it is like a stress reliever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's amazing how that happens.
Yeah, it really is. Because I think it just takes you out of the moment, takes you out of your mindset,
yeah,
you know, completely, you know, just because you have to start thinking about things and slowing down for your shots. And,
mm-hmm,
you know, it's a bit of escapism for me.
Yeah, same.
Like you said, you know, you walk home from work a couple of miles. I have a tendency, if I'm shooting just cityscape, there's an old motel that's down the road for me. That's, you know, I've driven by it every day since I was a child, being born and raised in Pasadena. It's, you know, it hasn't changed. It's kind of a constant. You know, so it's a bit of a security blanket for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think if you watch that CineStill short, you probably saw it because I dragged Brandon, the director, there just so you could see it. But there's something about that location and that I think the familiarity of it and being able to kind of step out of the noise of the day and just being able to shoot something that I kind of have an intimate conversation with. I've never been to that hotel other than just driving by, but kind of the old 50s road sign, the lights that constantly change to me, it has a silent beauty to it that to me always deserves to be captured before, you know, things change, it gets torn down, and,
mm-hmm,
you know, a parking lot gets built, or, you know, who knows what will happen as things change through the years. But for now, it's a constant that I still enjoy visiting.
Man, we have one of the, I have one of those too. There's this like abandoned, it's just like a big abandoned complex that's like in the shape of an L that has like a really neat alley, and, mm-hmm, all the windows are broken out, and it's just always cool to, you know, maybe at least once a week walk down there and something's different every time,
yeah,
I go. And, you know, there's like either a new graffiti, or, mm-hmm, they painted back over the graffiti, or this door's broken off now, and there's a picnic table out here that wasn't here,
mm-hmm,
before. You know, there's always, yeah, it's just like a nice beacon to go and feel familiar and just, you know, shoot a couple shots. Again, something like, you don't always have to shoot. I think people forget that too, that you don't always have to shoot for something.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
it's not, you're not out like shooting a publication every time you go out and shoot. I mean, sometimes it's just nice to go out and just shoot stupid stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
that's the rut I'm in. I'm just like, there has to be a purpose. I have to have like, it needs to be shown after, and it needs to be like of this certain type of person or whatever. And it's like, so I haven't really taken any photos because, you know,
yeah,
that's not aligning,
yeah,
with what is actually happening. So,
yeah, and that's a hard rut to kind of get out of, to get your mind out of that. You know, I,
mm-hmm,
think, you know, for me, it took years to kind of arrive to the decision that I'm just going to shoot for myself. And if people gravitate towards the work, great. And if nobody ever sees it, you know, it at least I know that, you know, for me, it provided a sense of solace. You know,
mm-hmm.
you know it's something that provides, you know, a bit of, you know, magic or wonder for me, something that I can look back on in that moment, you know, maybe perhaps remember the day or what was going on, a bit of a time capsule per se. But
yeah,
you know, for me, I've just so become enamored with just our constantly changing sky that there's something I just can't get away from. I can't wrap my head around, you know, just the colors that again, to go back, the colors that, you know, are presented to us like pre-dawn, you know, when you go through the range mm-hmm. of purples to reds, scarlets to oranges. It's, to me, it's just mind-boggling that that more people don't make a point at getting out and seeing.
Right.
I just feel, you know, maybe it's just naive of me. I just want people to experience the same kind of wonder and enjoyment that I get from it. You know, and I know not everybody, you know, that are really into that, but I think that there has to be a point where somebody looks up at an early morning sky and it's just like, wow, it's kind of blown away by this, or it takes your breath away. There's just that silent beauty in the world that goes missed so mm-hmm. much. And maybe that's just the landscape side of me. I just want to share that with so many people, but you know,
yeah,
it's just, oh, it's hard to get it out there.
I get it.
And I'm going to get up at 4 a.m. now, Ben. Yeah. Thanks.
Do it.
Yeah. I've been wanting to do that for a while. I often think of how quiet, because I mean, it's the population just keeps growing here and here, like mm-hmm. the Nashville area is just expanding so greatly in the last like couple years that I've been here. And, you know, it really is the only quiet time mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. at 2, 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning. And once the cars start going again, it's just like, oh, it's another day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. It's, you know, unfortunately, I think that just the world has become such a busy place that it's harder and harder yeah. for people to make time just to kind of slow down and take the enjoyment, offer a little bit of peace of mind, a little bit more happiness in the world. People would just take a moment to appreciate some of the beauty around them. And that doesn't have to be at 4 a.m. You don't have to get up early. Yeah,
true.
Because you know, there's so much of beauty that exists outside, you know, at all times during the day. I just think that for them to pay attention to it, that it's something that I would hope that somebody would.
Yeah, take a picture of it instead of looking at your phone.
Yeah, exactly. At this point, you know, I would rather see somebody stop by the side of the road out of their car just staring at the sky than having their iPhone out taking a picture of it at that point.
Right.
It's kind of judgy for me to say when I'm out there with my camera, but it's, you know, I think that everybody's just looking down. Nobody's looking up anymore.
Ugh. That's a whole nother conversation.
I know.
And you always see, well, I always see that too. Like, we were at a concert not too long ago, and this one girl was standing right next to me and she was filming. I mean, I get it. She wanted to film the song or something like yeah. that. So she had it. But she was, instead of just holding her phone there, it was getting the whole scene.
It's like right in front of her face.
Staring into it. Like not even watching this beautiful live event that was going on. And I'm like, look up.
Yeah, look up.
You're missing it.
Yeah. And I think, unfortunately, that's just the time that we're in now. It is.
Yeah.
It's very, the last show that I was at, I can't even remember what it was, but it was very difficult for me to see the stage through the sea of iPhone screens that were kind mm-hmm. of projecting my back into my face. So it's like, I'm trying to enjoy the moment, but you know, it's everybody lives on their phone now. So
it's crazy.
Yeah. Where they should all live in their camera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Ben, we've been asking a lot of our recent guests this question. Do you have any publications in the works? Any zines, any books, any art shows?
I have one part of a show called Everything Is Still, which is in late June at Vermont Museum through the Southern Vermont Arts Center. It's
Cool.
It's being put on by a gentleman named Stephen Schwab. It is focusing on artists that work with cinema stock. So guys that shoot like cinema stock and stuff
Like
that.
Cool.
Yeah. So you've got, I can't remember how many artists, there's going to be 30 artists, you know, the Wright brothers from Sin Still, myself, Adam, he may be a part of it, and a few others. So that's the next show that's coming up. I just finished a solo show called The Small Hours, which is on my website, which folks can take a look at, which is really focuses kind of on the abstract desert landscapes in the Eastern Sierras. I'd love to do a zine and kind of get out there. And that way I kind of love that grassroots movement. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I haven't started looking into that. Adam and I had talked about doing something together and just trying
to figure
something
out.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
We haven't fleshed anything out. You know, it's just kind of when we get in the dark room and work together, try and come up with some ideas. But I'd love to put something together. So if you guys know anybody want to put together a zine or, you know, I'm always open to kind of, you know, to share my stuff that way. But right now it's just trying to amass another body of work, perhaps to show, you know, at some point.
Great.
The last show was some great pieces. They were all huge, like 40 by 40s. And
nice. Yeah.
Yeah. 78 by 46. Some really big pieces, which are great to show on large scale. Maybe I'll, you know, send that out to show somewhere else. I had some interesting people that are looking at certain pieces. So maybe they'll be able to see one out your way at some point.
Do you sell a lot of your work too?
Some, you know, it's, believe it or not, you know, the LA photo community or the LA art world is so kind of incestuous and insular that you have to be pretty well known to kind of break into that.
Right.
Yeah. I've shown down in Texas, you know, and it seems like the art scene in San Antonio and in Houston, those places are far more receptive to kind of the abstract photography, which is great, you know, through the help of a great photographer down there by the name of David Salinas. He kind of introduced me to his community, much like the LA Brewery Art Studios. It's kind of a collaborative work. So they amass a lot of group shows and things. It seems like a lot of the folks down in Texas gravitated towards those abstract landscapes. I had one piece of a decomposed cow skeleton.
Wow. Yeah,
which, you know, I don't want to stereotype the folks in Texas, but I guess maybe the cattle kind of appealed to that audience. But I'd really appreciate the support that I got through the collective down there. And I think that you're going to see some great work coming out from a lot of folks down there.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear that a lot. I hear that Texas is, you know, especially in the photography world too. I mean, that's where they have the, like, Polacon. There's a lot of Polaroid shooters and stuff that are down in that area.
Yeah.
And
that Denton area.
Denton. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Our former guest, Troy Bradford. He's a,
Troy's
a
great
staple down there.
He's such a nice guy.
He's the best.
Yeah. Such a sweetheart.
Yeah,
and I know Jason Lee's down there outside of Denton. He's good. I always got a great body of work. It brings a lot of interest into the photography community, which I think is wonderful. It exposes a lot of people that didn't necessarily want to pursue kind of medium or large format photography that really seem to have taken an interest. And I'd love to see that people have this vested interest and love of, you know, kind of wanting to move forward and exploring other mediums rather than just sticking with 35 millimeter. They kind of want to branch out into new areas, and anything that we can do in our community to kind of expose, you know, all the other formats, you know, hopefully will help kind of seal the fate of film for us all and be able to continue shooting for, you know, decades to come, hopefully.
Amen.
Be better, man.
I'll be so ticked if that
doesn't happen.
Either that or we're going to all have to start coming up with our own developers and own papers, you know, figure out that void. But, you know, it seems like there's some great grassroots movements that are producing some wonderful stocks. So, you know, kudos to those guys.
Yeah,
and thanks
for
bringing that stuff to us all.
Absolutely.
We'll be right back with a listener question for Ben right after this message from our sponsor.
Support for Analog Talk also comes from Polaroid Originals. Go to PolaroidOriginals.com and use the offer code ANALOGTALK10 at checkout to receive 10% off your next purchase.
All right, guys, this is part of the show where we break off and take a question from one of our listeners. And this week's question comes from a former guest, Wes Boker. And he asks, to what degree are your images realized before you bring them to life?
You know,
it's deep.
Yeah, I think everything that I usually have a tendency to shoot is just kind of spontaneous. I don't really go out with a set idea of what I'm going to try and capture. It usually kind of unfolds and presents itself. I do have a tendency to shoot a lot of double and triple exposure, so that's, you know, something that will always kind of factor into it. But as far as having any kind of preconceived idea, it's really the light of the day that kind of dictates to me exactly, you know, kind of what I'm going to see. And it's, you know, it's one of those things that we all go through when we're shooting. It's, you know, the light's going to dictate. And if I don't make that kind of decision just within my head within that second, it's going to be gone 5 seconds later. So I think that usually what you see when I post is, you know, that is really just kind of the magic of the moment. That's I frame within the camera, which is within that second, and whatever shows up when I develop the film is really just kind of it's really just kind of the magic of the day. So I really, unless I'm shooting maybe like a portrait of somebody, I may have a certain look that I'm going for, but like I mentioned earlier, I don't really shoot a lot of portraits, so it's probably one of the reasons I'm so horrible at it. That maybe if I realize shots a little bit more in my head before time, it would be better. But I think I'd lose a lot of the kind of spontaneity, the magic, if I try and limit myself to that rule, I guess. It's a great question. Yeah.
Yeah, that is really good. And portraits are like a total pain in the butt. Like, Chris, I mean, that's what you do.
Yeah.
You know, you like shooting the portrait and stuff, but I think you need to be three steps ahead. And watching you when we were at the Padilla, the film photography Padilla, Chris, like just seeing you like kind of like put in direct and stuff like that. Like, I'm so bad at telling people what to do, just like you said earlier. You know, it's tough to, I'm just not that comfortable with doing that. Like, I can say put your chin down. That's about as far as I usually go. Put your chin down, put your chin up, you know, look over to the left, look to the right. But when you're like, you know, putting people in these weird, twisty, bendy, like, you know, like Justin Rosenberg, like he gets his models to like do the crazy, like I just don't know how people do that.
Yeah.
Well, what you guys said earlier about like the process of your career and how you like your technique and your look all comes from that. I mean, like when I first started, I was so shy and could never think about directing anybody. But now after 15 years of like shooting weddings and you know, working in a portrait studio, like I don't know if I've told the story on the show before, but my first wedding, I was a second shooting and I sat in the car freaking out before I like got out and went and did it. And you just have to go and you have to go and you have to learn. You have to just shoot more portraits. It's just,
And I think that's with everything. Yeah. Like you're saying, the more you shoot, the more comfortable you get. But you know, if it's shooting weddings or street or landscape, you know, obviously the more you do it, the more comfortable you are. But you know, I can't imagine shooting somebody's wedding because I think it would just be, I would turn them in my prints and they would just think I was insane because it was just, everything would be double exposed, you know, and the light would be off.
I would love to see that.
You should shoot a wedding just because of that.
It might be kind of fun, I guess. If somebody's willing to have me do that, to shoot a really bizarre, abstract kind of portrayal of their wedding day, then I'll give it a go, but
that would be so
kind of
cool.
Fun.
Yeah,
that was a great question.
Yeah, thanks, Wes.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, then we have the tough questions then too. It's kind of a two-part question, and the first one is Desert Island Camera, like the one camera that you couldn't live without. Like, what would be, the apocalypse is happening? Which one are you grabbing?
I think that I would probably grab my hand-built 4x5. It's a camera that has a bizarre name. It's called a Razzle, which was built out of a Polaroid 800 by a guy in Australia named Dean Jones, who's sadly passed away. But he built a 4x5 back, so it's a handheld 4x5. But a back that he designed allowed you to remove it so I can shoot 4x5 or roll film or Polaroid backs and everything. So I can shoot everything from 120 up to 4x5. So it's really light and amazing to shoot. I took it with us on a trip to Paris for a month, and being able to shoot kind of three different formats all within one camera.
What's it called?
It's called a Razzle.
Yeah.
And I think you can probably still see something on the internet. It's basically just a Polaroid 110B converted, which I don't know if you guys are familiar with. You know, the four designs came out with like a 3.25x4.25 pack film version.
I remember the big
folder. So it's based on that kind of that body. And some other folks have done, you know, conversions. That one was built for me. It's still next to the Hasselblad, probably my favorite camera. Just because it's the construction of it, that probably is the only lens where it actually functions correctly, because it was clean before I got it. So the speeds are accurate and everything, but it's just an amazing camera to shoot. Yeah. If anybody finds one on eBay sometime, if you've got the means, pick one up. It's a beautiful camera to shoot.
Yeah, it sounds amazing.
Yeah, I mean, three different formats in one camera, you can't really
beat
that.
It's a dream.
It really is. And it's, you know, being able to shift between roll and instant 4x5 all within one one shot. I did shoot the Goldberg sisters recording that album on that camera, and a lot of the shots that came out of it. Yeah, nice. You can see on my website are done with that camera. And, you know, it's always produces just a beautiful results.
So then the second part of the question is there anything that you're lusting after, your white whale camera? Anything that you haven't had a chance to get, but you really, really want?
That's the tough question.
I think yeah.
I've got so many clever stuff. I'll take them all.
Yeah. I think maybe an Aero Liberator, I think probably. Mm. I know that Adam, again, talked about it on the show. It's such an amazing kind of beast of a camera, that lens, that 2.8 that he has on there, that Aero Liberator with that shallow depth of field. I mean, if you can nail that razor sharp focus, there's something about that look on the film stock, that whatever film stock you're using, if you can nail the focus on it, it's unmatched by any other camera, in my opinion, on the market today. It's just beautiful, and it's beautifully constructed,
Yeah, it's just a piece of art in itself.
Yeah. Adam has let me shoot his a couple times.
Cool.
So to be able to kind of see it firsthand and just to be able to work with something that is as much a piece of art as kind of the art that you're producing within the camera. It seems like this strange kind of symbiotic relationship that you can only, only achieve on so few cameras. So. That's probably the white whale.
Man, good one.
Yeah, great answer.
Yeah, I had to look that up after we had interviewed him, because I recognized the name, and I've heard it, been talked about before, but I never really saw what they look like. And I was like, oh yeah, I know what that is. That's cool.
Yeah, the list.
Yeah, I want one too.
Yeah.
Yeah, the list is long. There's probably a few others in there, and we spend hours, sometimes early morning conversations, Adam and I, sending constant links through eBay or any other place that we find. Yeah. And it just seems like, oh, have you seen this one? Have you seen this one? Why don't we have this one yet? We have this amassed these camera collections where we constantly, kind of share things with each other, lenses or bodies and things like that. So it's always to find a kindred spirit, where your art kind of runs in the same vein.
Yeah.
Which is, it's similar but different enough that you kind of stand on your own, but you appreciate each other's work and understand each other enough that, you can see how one camera or film could benefit their work, and to be able to share those kind of ideas with, a person. It's always amazing to kind of have that relationship with a peer.
How'd you guys meet?
It's an interesting question. Back in, I think it was probably 2008, somewhere in there. It was when Flickr was kind of where everybody was. And obviously the Polaroid peel apart world has kind of always been there. But at that point, I don't want to say it had fallen out of favor, but the people that were using it was, digital was kind of in its rise. And so the folks that were shooting, the world was a lot smaller at that point. So, when you look for, 669 or a camera through Flickr to kind of see what people were shooting, kind of started noticing these shots that were kind of really kind of speaking to me on a visceral level, vastly different from my work, but was using kind of the same film stock. We just kind of started liking each other's photos. And then I think one day I sent him an email because I wanted to do a portrait series and kind of start, with some of the folks that I had kind of met along the way. And he was like, we're kind of in the same area. Let's get together. We'll talk cameras and we'll shoot. We ended up just connecting that way, through Flickr. And ever since
I was wondering if it was like a photo related way you guys came together.
Yeah.
I have some Flickr friends in real life now too.
Yeah, it's great.
Yay, Flickr friends.
Yeah, Flickr friends. I mean, that Flickr was like in 2008 especially.
Yeah.
It was
it was a big deal.
You hung out if you were into that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So that's really cool.
Yeah, and it definitely is still has. I'm not on there nearly as much as I used to be. In fact, I don't even have an account there anymore, but it's still a great resource for anybody who's into old cameras that needs a repair question or is looking for a part for an obscure camera. And the community is still really receptive to answer any of the questions. To me, I think that's one of the wonderful things about Flickr was it just had this kind of camaraderie of people that just love photography and cameras, to where you could go and not feel kind of looked down upon by unappreciated scholars of the medium. And you're like, I'm not going to answer these questions, and you just need to figure it out. They just kind of embraced everybody and pointed you in the right direction to kind of keep you going. And it helps keeps the cameras alive that we're all shooting. And I think it it kind of definitely bolsters the interest in film in itself. So you see a little bit of that in Instagram these days. I don't think it's quite as...
It's not the same.
It's not the same, and they don't really embrace the questions or are willing to communicate. Yeah. I know you can't send a huge kind of insta message, but I think now people are a little bit more insular in the sense that they're not really kind of reaching out. Everybody's really kind of guarded, or they just don't necessarily seem to have the same interests anymore. I think we're still a smaller niche community of film photographers. So.
Yeah, I feel like it's probably mostly because Flickr was I guess you probably could put whatever up there, but you know, Instagram people are putting everything up, you know?
Yeah.
But Flickr's got to make a comeback. I miss Flickr.
Flickr's still a big part of my work. I mean, yeah. I didn't want to, and I complained about it, you know, on previous shows when they were doing the, you know, you had to either cut your library down to 1,000 photos or pay for a monthly subscription. And, you know, I kind of threw a fit about it. I was a little upset because, you know, they were offering such a great service for photographers for free. Yeah. And I get it. I mean, they need to stay relevant if they want to keep going. And I, you know, I pay it. I paid it. Yeah. I paid the $50 or whatever it was for a year. And because, I mean, I'm like, why not? I pay for Dropbox and I basically use the same. I use it for the same thing. And like, having it on Flickr, it's like a community, plus it's like my library. Like I just dump and dump and dump when I develop film. I just dump it on my Flickr so I can access it. Or if I'm feeling inspired, I can just scroll through it and, you know, put a couple pictures. I just love Flickr. I still use it every single day. You know, I use it every day.
And there's still a lot of great work out there, too.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, you can still have a Flickr account. I don't want you to think, anyone who's listening, that you can. You just have to limit your library down to 1,000 photos, which is fine.
Yeah.
You know, that's okay.
Yeah. It definitely is worth it for folks. I think, you know, if they're looking to get started in kind of film photography with old cameras, it's definitely a place where you can find the help that you need.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of other great forums out there that you can reach out to folks on to kind of move into. I'm rebuilding an old Graflex SLR Series B right now.
Oh, cool.
And that
cool.
Graflex actually has a great forum site, you know, so if anybody's looking, you know, just to jump in there, and you know, you get kind of these old guys that have been around forever. They're so, you know, kind of warm and willing to help you with these old cameras that, you know, it gives me hope that there's folks out there that are willing to help us all.
Exactly.
Cool.
Well, this has been awesome, Ben.
Yeah, it has been, guys. I appreciate you taking the time to sit down and talk with me.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Hopefully I didn't go off on wild tangents too much. That.
No, they were great. That's the best part.
Yeah.
Where can everybody check out your work?
You could either go to my website, just benparks.com, Instagram handle, which is where I usually post stuff daily. You know, it's more current than my actual website. It's Ben Parks, but it's minus the A, so it's BENPRKS. Just actually type in Ben Parks, you're gonna really make some 12-year-old happy.
I was gonna say, I was like, I feel like somebody's got that one.
Yeah, exactly. They had it, and I was just like, hey, my mom doesn't like it when all these people comment on my stuff. So.
Oh man,
that's funny.
Yeah, those are the two best places to find me.
Awesome. And Timothy?
Guys, you can find me on Instagram and Twitter and Flickr at Timothy Makeups. So that's at Timothy Makeups. I also make film photography related YouTube videos. You can just go to youtube.com and go to the search bar. It's the easiest way to find it. Just search Timothy.makeups. You'll see a bunch of backlog stuff. I have new stuff on the way. Chris, where are you at?
So I am Chris B. Photo on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, which I have a video coming very soon.
Yeah.
And I'm Chris B. Photo on Flickr too. There's some old stuff on there. If you want to look at my old stuff. And we are Analog Talk Pod on Twitter, Analog Talk Podcast on Instagram, and we have a Facebook group and a page. So yeah, that's it.
Awesome.
Well, thank you again, Ben. This has been awesome. We really loved talking with you, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you, guys. Have a good one.
All right.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
First off, we want to thank Ben for being on the show. Ben, thanks for taking the time to hang out, chat about your awesome process. We love your work. We're big fans of your painterly, wonderful, beautiful landscapes. And that takes us to Patreon. Guys, head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. We have a bunch of stuff over there, a bunch of tiers, print giveaway, live streams, after shows, all kinds of fun stuff. So thanks for all the support for the Patreons already. Guys, if it's something you're interested in, the link is in the description. Again, head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. Thanks, guys. We'll see you next week.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.